Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on what's popular in the swine industry. By listening to Popular Pig, you will receive invaluable information on the latest trends, news, and research from various experts who guide the global pork industry. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com. Popular Pig is also made possible by
the National Pork Board,
Farm Credit Services of America, Johnsonville Foods, Hypor Genetics, Minitube, Orbit Farm Technologies, Brenneman Pork, PIC North America, Swine Robotics, Neogen, Innovative Heating, and PigEquipment.com. Brought to you by American Resources.
Welcome to the Popular Pig Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Rota, and today we're joined by Saskia Blumhoff and Sergio Canavate. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing good, Matthew. Glad to be here with you.
So both Saskia and Sergio are from Genus PIC, and today we're going to talk about genetics and P1 development, maybe a little bit about mortality. If we could lead off the call with Saskia sharing your background and how you got involved with pigs, that would be awesome.
Yeah, so I'm originally from the Netherlands. I grew up dairy, and I was convinced as a girl, I knew the pedigrees of every single cow in our herd. So I was convinced I was going to be a dairy cattle breeder. And so did my bachelor's in animal breeding and genetics. And thanks to a study advisor, I did end up in the swine genetic industry, and I learned there, I was like, whoa, these generation intervals are way shorter. Things go way faster in pigs than they go in cattle. So that is how I ended up at a pig breeding company at the time, and did my PhD in animal breeding and genetics, focused on sow robustness. And since the past 11 years, I'm here with PIC.
That's awesome. And Sergio, you mind explaining your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm from UWS Saskia, originally from Spain. I started my career being a veterinarian of goats and sheep. And I got paid 6 months in a year. So when I did my first interview in a pork company that I have been working in Spain, I wanted to get paid for 12 months in a year. I said, of course. So, and I said, well, I'm your man, right? So that happened more than 15 years ago. And I still got paid on a monthly basis, right? So I started my career as a veterinarian in that company. And then I moved to PSC Spain. And then from Spain, I got the chance to move with my family to US 11 years ago, and I played different roles in technical services, North America. And I'm blessed that I was able to learn a lot from peers, colleagues, customers, right? So this is me, Matthew.
And the first time we met, that was on a farm tour, wasn't it?
I think so, right?
Yeah, with Greg and with Jeff.
Absolutely. I remember that. Yes, I remember that. It's the first time that we met in person, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because since Greg was there with you, and Greg, he might listen to this, I'm not sure. But that guy is more organized and thoughtful than most people I've met within Genus. And I tell you what, we have some fun. At least I hope he has fun with it. But I think we have some fun figuring out who can find the best donuts for the farms that we go to.
Absolutely.
Showed up with 4 boxes of Dunkin' Donuts, and I was like, holy cow.
Absolutely. It's a learning, right? So when you visit a farm, you're going to be asking people for their time, their knowledge, their patience. So it's better when we bring donuts first, right?
And say absolutely. And sometimes the farms, we don't allow food in, and it's like, bummer. But no, I've learned a lot from him in that regards, and a lot from you and the rest of the team at PIC. And so I'm excited to talk a little bit today about genetics and P1 development and mortality. But before we do that, I'd like to ask some rapid fire questions to kind of get to know you guys better and help the listeners know you better. And we're going to start with Saskia. So the first rapid fire question is going to be, do you have a nickname?
Tulip.
Tulip.
Yeah.
Is that because of your background in the Netherlands?
Yeah, that's how one of my dear coworkers here, he gives everybody a nickname, and somehow I ended up with Tulip. So, I mean, there are worse nicknames. I mean,
Sergio, what about you?
I don't know if I have a nickname. Some people call me by my last name, and they produce my last name wrongly. So that could be a really fun nickname.
How do they say it?
You know, Cannabate, Cannabante. So depending who is calling me, I know how they pronounce it, so I know who is the person on the other side of the call, right?
Next question is, do you have a favorite sports team that you root for? We'll start with Sergio on this one.
Oh, it's not a team. It's a culture. It's a religion. It's Real Madrid.
That is a religion. So you're not a big Barcelona guy then?
I'm a big against Barcelona guy, yeah. Somehow, we cannot live with the other team, right? It's part of our culture, right?
What about you, Saskia?
Well, let's say soccer then. For me, it's Ajax, the soccer club out of Amsterdam. And it is truly a religion because most funny backstory is most of our pig production is in the south of the Netherlands. And most of these people all support PSV. And it's even that way that our franchise has like this we call it the skybox for their customers so they can watch games. And every single time we have a customer meeting in there, my dad tells me, you're out of my out of my inheritance because going to the PSV stadium as a Bloemhof daughter, that's unheard of. So it is a religion, yes.
I've tried to share with individuals that haven't traveled internationally or do not have a lot of international friends, just how serious it is. But even for individuals that are out of the country, I think the only thing I can find in the US that is somewhat comparable, and it's still not as passionate, but it's probably college football.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I would say
that's about as close as it gets, but it is die hard. I mean, you don't see torches and people wearing trash cans running down the street screaming for college football. So
you don't have hooligans, do you?
So I'd say it doesn't get quite that level. But I guess last question for you guys is, if you could choose, if you go all the way back to the beginning again and you couldn't work in agriculture, what industry do you think you end up in?
So no, to me, it's not that about it. I will keep doing the same that I'm doing today.
No, I mean, but what if you couldn't? What if agriculture didn't even exist?
What if I couldn't?
Yeah, what if it didn't even exist?
You know, I will be a doctor.
Yeah.
Maybe a pediatrician. Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Saskia?
I'm scratching my head here. I mean, you're asking the dairy girl that doesn't know anything different. I really don't know. A world traveler. I would just go travel for a living then or something. I don't know.
Well, so to kick off the conversation today, I think the first question I'd like to ask is, what is the current state of sow mortality and how is PIC addressing sow mortality?
Yeah, do you want me to start off, Sergio, and then you can...
Yeah, you can take off the conversation with the genetic part if you want. I think
it's no secret that sow mortality has gone up over the past years. And I think, you know, all of us know that our productivity has increased on our females. You know, we have animals that grow faster. We have animals that are more efficient. We produce larger litters. We have heavier litters. You know, a lot of this has changed. And I think as a consequence or a byproduct of maybe all of us not completely, you know, keeping up with that genetic improvement in itself, and that's not a finger pointing game, but mainly also looking at ourselves, like we've changed this sow massively. And as a consequence, you know, byproduct, we've seen our mortality go up. And I think what we have learned mainly over the past years is that we partly need to go back. You know, part of solving the problem is focusing on it from a genetic side of things. But also at the same time, we need to go back and look at those pigs and think like, hey, what has changed? How do we need to manage these animals? And some of these things are really going back to basic, like look at individual sows and take better care of them. And one thing I forgot to say, you know, as these pigs changed, we also, the industry has changed, right? I mean, production costs are higher. We have less labor. We are putting these animals in pens or groups. There is disease all around. So not only the pig has changed, but the environment has changed with it. And by not fully keeping up with that, I think we've seen that increase in the industry coming along.
So then how is PIC looking at, or I guess, what is your approach when using genetics to address that mortality?
Yeah, so we have developed something what we call the four pillars. And you could almost say it's like four pillars. Look at it like a table. A table has four legs, right? So yes. Every leg holds the weight of the table. And one, you cannot have a table without one leg because it will fall. So we look at it as the four pillars start with genetics. We're a genetic company at the end of the day, so we need to make sure that we have a strong genetic foundation. And then what we have found is then the second pillar is P1 development. And the third pillar is body conditioning, feeding, and then the fourth one is individual sow care. So all these four you need to put in place or have in place in order to improve robustness or reduce mortality.
So have you seen success since implementing the four pillars? What does that look like?
So I'll let Sergio handle that, because on the genetic side, yeah, we have definitely seen some changes in genetic trends, but I think the more short-term results are more what Sergio can talk about from a management perspective.
You know, Matthew, in that regards, Saskia mentioned a key word in here, it is the four pillars of cell robustness, right? So robustness means survivability, performance, and cost of production, right? We need to have the three. This is the Hiram triangle, right? And we know that it's possible impact those three key elements, right, in any pork producers in the world, right, just taking advantage of the genetic progress that we have made, right, or Saskia is making, leading the genetic progress, because obviously everything starts from the management standpoint or reproduction standpoint. We focus on mortality because it's one of the key elements that we can track, right, commonly in a system and a production company or as an industry. But to me, it's kind of an iceberg, right? We have the other 70% of removals, right, are due to reproduction, right? This is something that also concerns to us, right, because something is happening with those animals that they are not able to furrow one time and that doesn't furrow for a second time. It's something that we need to look at more in detail. So starts with parity one development, right? Parity one is the key. And it's just the normal evolution of the gill development that we have been talking for years, but just moving that principles to develop a parity one that is going to be strong, is going to be capable to succeed during the first lactation, to win and to maximize their winning performance, or to win their own litter, to be easy to manage, to be easy rebred and further for second time, right? So, and anything start with taking advantage of the genetic progress that we made, as I said before, right? We have a really fast and efficient gill growth, right? So we need to take advantage of that. Females are cycling before, right? And earlier with early puberty, right? We just need to adjust our management strategy to take advantage of that genetic potential.
Absolutely. And before we get into P1 and P2, I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask you, Saskia. But to your point, Sergio, when we look at the genetic potential across genetic providers, we're just not maximizing the potential we already have. And I think we were able to make progress so fast that we just got used to the genetics companies raising the bar for us without necessarily needing to go and change all that much in the barn. And I think there's an overwhelming amount of opportunity just sitting in that barn already today that we can access just by focusing on execution of the processes we know we should be doing. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, it is fair, Matthew. And I think Saskia is something also related to the genetic program with the GNX, right?
Yeah.
Because that is a key piece in our genetic program.
So Saskia, when you look at the genetic progress PIC is making, or just genetic progress in general with pigs, the issues we're living with today, how far back are we living the decisions that were made? Are these decisions that were made a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? And the decisions we make today, how long will it be until we can truly realize the benefits of some of the changes that we're trying to do within genetics?
No, that's a great question, Matthew. And I think, you know, the great thing about genetic improvement is that it's cumulative, right? So each year you make a step, small step. So if you talk total born, we add like 0.3 piglet a litter each year. And over one, from 1 year to the other year, that might not sound that much, but over time it becomes quite a lot. And if we look at, if I do something today in my elite farms or genetic nucleus farms, yeah, it takes like 2 years, about 2 years to reach our customers. And of course, then it needs to get through the system, et cetera, et cetera. So it is a long process. However, it is something that's permanent. It's a permanent change. And you were just talking about, you know, we, like in 2013, we implemented what we call relationship-based genomic selection, and that made a huge change. Like all of a sudden, it's sort of a light switch that we turned on. We increased total born, we improved pre-weaned mortality, we got heavier piglets. And, you know, and then just what you say, if in the barn, or even, and us also, if we don't keep up with our recommendations or keep up with our base things in general, there is a huge potential being left on the table or you can gain. But one of the things, what is really important, and we talked earlier a bit about mortality and stuff, is mortality is a really difficult trait to measure in your nucleus farms, as you can imagine, because in your nucleus farms, you have high replacement rate, you have high health because you want to ship those animals all over the globe. You have relatively a lot of staff because you're measuring a lot of different traits. So that expression of that mortality just simply doesn't occur there as much because the circumstances are really good. So one of the things we implemented, I think it will be 5-6 years ago, is what Sergio referred to as maternal GN crossbred program. And in that program, we follow our Cambro female, which is an F1 female. And we what we do is we know mom and dad of these commercial females, and we track them until they leave the herd. And because we have the pedigree of these females and we know why they leave the herd, we can, directly influence our selection decisions, because these animals are sired with a land raised boar that, or large white, that has relatives in our elite farms. And we have a couple of systems where we do this and where we sort of genotype these animals so that we know the pedigree of these commercial females. These are just in flows that are PRRS positive, that are just general, normal existing farms, nothing different about it. And we collect data on why these animals get removed. And I think it's about over 100,000 data points per year or something in that line. And we've done that for over the past 5 years. And by doing that, we can really determine why animals leave the herd. And also we can then, because I need a trait to be able to select on, then the next step is I can work on improving that trait by genetic selection and by having that that information.
There's a lot to it.
There is a lot to it because, I mean, as everybody probably knows, like our commercial females in general, we don't know who father and mother are because we use pooled semen and they just go into a flow. And we want to know, but that is at the end of the day, the product that our customers are receiving. They are not, I mean, we also are not in the business to have the best animals that produce the best in our elite farms. Now, what we want is, we want the animals that produce in our customer systems. That is our goal. And what we're able to do through this is we're selecting on a couple of things there. So we are not necessarily improving mortality as a black box. Now, what we found was that most sows leave the herd because of three or four reasons. It's like reproductive failure. So simply, we don't get them bred. Lameness, productivity, and prolapses. That's sort of why animals leave the farm. So on the reproductive failure, the trait we have added to our selection objectives, and that data comes mainly through our maternal gene act, is a sow being culled or removed from the herd before third parity because we didn't get her pregnant or she didn't farrow. So that's a trait we're selecting on, and that heritability is similar to litter size. And we all know litter size, we can improve. So, you know, we expect that we can improve this trait as well. On lameness, we have selected animals on feet and legs for years and years and years. And it was a subjective scoring, and it has been very effective. So we score like front legs, back legs, how they walk, et cetera, et cetera. But you can imagine, by having that as a subjective scoring, if you score 1,000 animals a day or maybe 500, your first animal and your last animal, I mean, your eyes might get tired. So one of the things we have developed in-house is a system that is measuring using cameras. We are doing digital phenotyping. So we have our animals, our boars and our gilts, will walk in front of the camera. The camera will assess them, or the software will assess the videos, and then the software will provide a score to those animals for their feet and legs. And we have connected that information to longevity of females. So in that way, we from going from a subjective score, somebody just giving a score, to an objective score by using the camera, we actually have been able to improve the heritability 3 times. And that means that we are just better in being more accurate in our selecting against lameness. So that's a second trait, how we improve mortality. And then the third one is reducing the risk for pelvic organ prolapses. And we do that through, again, using the data from, as well as our maternal gene crossbred program, as well as from maybe probably more than 100 of our multiplication farms that have pure line animals across the globe, where we collect that data on. And we found that, you know, certain families are just more at risk than other families for getting removed because of prolapses.
Does pens or crates for gestation have any impact on the prolapsing?
So
I've heard some opinions in the industry on whether or not that's the case.
So one thing before we go in there, what I do want to say, all our animals in our elite farms are in pens. But I do think, Sergio, you have some data, right, about crates versus pens. And before I speak out of my league here,
Go ahead, Sergio. You're up to bat.
Yeah, you know, it's coming back to the question, right? So as all depends, right, on some factors, right? Because there is a seasonal component, really, really a strong seasonal component, where summer is the lowest rate and winter's ferrous is the highest rate. But when we can compare side by side, right, within the same company, within the same environment, we used to find that group house settings used to have a little bit more, right, rates or higher rate than individual. But it's not always the case, right, because we have exceptions to that assumption, right? But it's going to depend case by case, right, I would say, right?
Okay, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
When we look at some of the high incidence of removals with P1s and P2s, what strategies, kind of going back to your conversation at the beginning around P1s, what strategies can producers implement to help prevent those kind of removals?
Well, there is one of the pillars that we try to implement is the parity one development, as we mentioned before, right? In reality, we are not asking customer producer to do more. It's just kind of evaluation of the process, right? Sometimes processes has been adapted 5-10 years ago, right? And we just need to evaluate how those processes work or fit into current scenario where we have a more efficient growth female.
Even the priority sometimes of that, right? Process, like, yes. Is it a priority? Whether, yeah. Or not, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. So that is the first evaluation, right? So the first thing that we try to look at to understand if there is any selection intensity challenges. I mean, is there anything that is impacting the quantity or the quality of the gills that arrive to the selection point, right? Obviously, if there's not enough gills to select from, or the quality of the gills to select from is not as good, right? Obviously, the overall gills selected, right, and we will vary group by group, right? And we want to gain some consistency. So that will be the first strategy. We have a really strong win-to-finish team, supply chain team that is helping in this kind of evaluations internally, in multiplication level, and also in commercial settings. The second thing will be selection practices, right? We try to apply or to share or to certify, just to provide those tools of selection, certification to all of our customers. It's going to be kind of a way to standardize the way that everybody's looking at what a good gills soup looks like. And this is another strategy. But first, as I mentioned before, we need to have the right pool in quality and size to select from. The third one is going to be gill eligibility criteria first meeting. Nothing has changed in age, weight, number of hits of age of puberty. We are trying to adjust some of those variables if they are not meeting the expectation, and specifically the age of first insemination, because with growth rate improvement that we have seen in the last 3 years, sometimes we need to do some adjustment in order to avoid to bring gills over 350 pounds, which is our top tier of weight, right? And then it's going to be, the next one is going to be from parity zero, the gill bred, to parity one wing and to parity two furrow, which is something related to body condition at farrowing, feed intake in the first lactation, so on and so forth, right? So this is kind of the general overview, right? From parity one to parity two rotation scheme.
How have customers seen value from implementing those kind of strategies?
You know, it's been a long journey, right? Because we typically were, our mindset was set to firefighting, right? And when we start working 3-4 years ago with industry partners, with customers, everybody agreed that since we start this process, it's going to take 15 months to see any success rate on parity to retention, right? And sometimes people say, wow, it's going to take so long. Yeah, it's what it takes. It's biology, right? We cannot change the biological process. But, you know, in between, we can work with customers to support them to evaluate relevant key performance indicators along the implementation, just to make sure that we are unlocking the generic potential. So we can evaluate the Git growth rate, the query development. We can evaluate the Git utilization rate, right? So how many brethren of the Git selected. We can be pushing firewind rate on Git from 90 to 95%. We can be working on body condition of firewind entry as a critical time point. We can target peaks win per ferro on parity ones. We can work on Windows service interval. So there are so many KPIs that we can track in between that is impacting positively to retention, is impacting positively to mortality, but it's impacting positively to the farm performance or overall system performance, right? So it's a really engaging process that all customers that we are blessed to work with, you know, we are happy with the outcome and really happy to have the opportunity to work closer to them.
So to kind of wrap things up, I'm going to ask you each one more question. And Saskia, I'm going to start with you.
Mm-hmm.
What are some final thoughts you'd like to share? And what should producers be expecting of the genetic side of PIC going into the future?
Yes. So that's kind of a big question, right? Wow. Yeah, no, if we, you know, overall, what we have seen and what I did wanted to point out, you know, we have also, in the short term, what we've also been doing is we have been actively calling out boars and also recommending females in multiplication to be called out based on their liability or risk for instance, prolapses, just to make sure that we have seen that some of these, I would say, poorer boars or poorer females, they're just more likely in itself to prolapse. So that's sort of short term where we just clean up the population in itself to get rid of that bottom end. So what I'm what I think, you know, what producers can look forward to is a sow that's easy to manage, that comes easily in heat, that has high farrowing rate, that stays in the herd until parity three. Because once we've got them in parity three, most of them will successfully continue their life, right? Until we have a better guild sitting there. So, and then a sow that weans her own piglets, good quality finisher pigs that at the end of the day go to a wean to finish barn and make it to market. So yeah, higher robustness, better quality pigs, and an easy to manage sow. Where in the meantime, we're pushing hard on, you know, just reducing the risk here and there in terms of liability for removal or mortality.
And Sergio, what can producers expect to see from tech services into the future? What would they expect that to look like as you guys continue to grow and help producers implement new strategies and take this genetic potential that continues to get better and help them realize that?
Yeah, this is another big question, right?
Yeah.
you know, as Saskia mentioned that, we don't have a perfect sow, right? And we never say that, right? But we have a great one. And it's really easy to work with that one. With our gear, with our sows, they really respond well to any changes on management practices. So, you know, from technical services standpoint, right, our purpose, right, is to use all the science that genetic services is giving us, nutrition is giving us, and many other departments on PSC, right, to work close to our customers, right? And we really want, and we are doing it, right? We are creating partnership with them. We really are part of their process, their projects, their SOPs. We want to support them in their day-to-day operation because if we understand better which are our customers' challenges, complaints, setbacks, right? Technical service will come up with some ideas, right? You know, to support them, right? We need to be closer to them, and this is what we are doing today. So, yes, this is what they should expect from technical services, a partner to work with that we will spend 24/7, 365 days in a year thinking and working for them, right? Just to make our customer the most successful customer in the world.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's really surprised me since I've gotten to know you and your team better is the when you say 24/7, 365, you're not lying. Like,
you know, things, close you're there. By, right? You know, really close to that, right? Really close to that.
So if anybody wanted to play a bad joke on Sergio, you can call him at 1 a.m. last question, Sergio, what is something unique about you most people in the industry do not know?
I don't know. That's a good question, right? You know, maybe something that I try to always make myself a note, a big judge and note on myself is being, let's get your disadvantage being your advantages, right? And I always try to put that in my professional life, personal life. I always learn from my youngest son. He's Lucas, he's autistic. It's a devastating condition, right, for all the kids and families. But you know what? I'm learning from him every single day on how to be a better professional, a better person, right? There is a world within the autism world that everybody should be, or everybody should have the chance at least to learn from, not to experience, but at least to learn from.
What about you, Saskia? What's something unique about you nobody knows or few people in the industry know?
You know, after what Sergio said here, it's really hard to top that.
Usually it's that you like donuts or something. Sergio went deeper.
I can't say Luca with you, Saskia.
yes, definitely. Yeah. So now what I'm going to say, everything will sound silly.
Well, usually it's silly. So Sergio went deep. So you don't
There are two things probably, you know, the first thing is whenever we go out for dinner, I always check the desserts just to judge what I'm going to order as a main course. And the second one with some people think is a bit, a lot of people within PIC know this by now, but I really like true crime podcasts. It's just, you know, a coping mechanism. Like you think your life is sometimes miserable. Well, there are people that have it way worse, you know?
Well, we appreciate having you both on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure to talk about genetics, early development, mortality, and the things that you guys are doing to make the industry better. And it's been great to get to know each of you a little better as well and to share that with the industry. So thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Popular Pig. We aspire to learn and grow together through the experience and wisdom shared by our esteemed guests. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues within the swine industry. For more information, please go to popularpig.com to receive updates when new episodes are available. Popular Pig is brought to you by SwineTech, the award-winning creators of SmartGuard and PigFlow. To learn how PigFlow can help you streamline your workforce and reduce piglet and sow deaths, visit swinetechnologies.com.